Good morning. I feel like I was just here. I was just here. So I'm really excited to be able to open up our service this morning. And we're discussing the coming year and 2020 and how we would wrap up this year. And we were talking about how, like, vision and eyesight, what do you think of when you think of 2020? And what a great reminder and a great play on words the word 2020 is. And, you know, I was thinking, like, how cool it will be to be writing 2020 on our checks, if you still do that. You know, you're having to see your 2020 calendar. You're seeing 2020 in front of you all the time. And I pray that once we're done speaking this morning, that it will be something that will be a trigger in your mind to remind you to keep your focus, keep your goals and your visions in the right place every time that you see it. So I don't have a ton of scriptures. I do have pictures. But I don't have a ton of scriptures, but I'm pretty certain that my dad will probably have plenty for both of us. He's up next, and he'll be sharing about vision and the importance of having vision and goals and how to set yourself up for success. One of my favorite quotes is, if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. So one of the questions I want to pose is, how do we set ourselves up for success? One of the things that I want to talk about this morning is triggers. I think that there are plenty of negative triggers throughout our life, whether that's people at work or your family or personal, like, self-talk or memories, things you see or remember that trigger feelings and responses in your life. And I think that many of those negative triggers we can't control. You know, we can't control Sally coming to work with a bad attitude and speaking to us like we're stupid. Like, we can't control those people. We can't control those things that happen to us, but we can control our responses. And I think that it also requires us to create space for positive triggers to happen in our lives. So I'm going to share just some things that I use, and hopefully my lovely photos will keep you engaged. I took some pictures around my house of things that I use practically in my own life to be a positive trigger consistently. And one of them is music. And if you didn't know, I really like music. I like to sing music. I like to listen to music. I like to dance to music, all of the above. I enjoy that. And it's a really positive and a really good release for me to be able to be involved with music. So one of the things I've done is I've created playlists for myself. So I have, like, a chill worship. I have a chill worship playlist that I might listen to when I'm feeling stressed out, or when I'm going to go to bed, or when I need to, like, lay there and breathe and calm myself and reset my brain. I have one that's like that. I have one that's literally called Songs I Need Right Now. You can't see it at the top, but that's really what it's called. And I've set those things up to be available to myself. I don't have to go searching for things to encourage me. I have something right in my phone that I can just push play. And it's songs like, you're going to be okay, you're going to make it, it's not the end, all of those things that you need in hard times in your life. One of the next things that I do, and I try to do it daily, is practicing consistent gratitude. So I know that I've shared about this in the past when we were talking about being grateful, but I actually have a journal that over the last year and a half to 2 years, I can flip through and I can see every day the five things that I've written to remind myself. And it's not earth-shattering, you know, it's not like these grand, thankful things. It's literally like, I love my cats and they're snuggling with me, or this is a really great cup of coffee, or I love the fall leaves changing, that kind of stuff. It's things that are small, but they add up and remind me to consistently be grateful to be here. One of the next things I do is I have quotes around my house. I have them in my bathroom. I have them on my door before I leave. I have them on the fridge. I have them where I make my coffee. There are things that when, you know, you're getting in the fridge, you're making your coffee daily, you're going to see those things in front of you. And that's something that I will do, or I'll write on my mirror, you know, things to be a consistent reminder to me. The next thing I do is I have jewelry, and I'm actually wearing it now. I have things that are reminders to me because, you know, you're looking down, washing your hands, and I see, you know, my words that are good reminders for myself. And It helps to remind me what's important and what matters and what I've decided matters for me. Another thing that I've found that's really helpful is creating consistent daily habits. So I'm not like a major cleaning person. I don't love to clean. That would be like my other sister. They really like cleaning, and so it's not my thing. But I recently heard somebody talking about how people who make their beds, which I'm not a bed maker, or haven't been, so people who make their bed, like successful people, make their bed consistently. So like in the last few months, I'm like, I'm not a bed maker, but this person is like talking about how successful people make their bed and how good it makes you feel. So I'm like, fine, make my bed. So I've daily made my bed, and it is shocking, like, oh, wow, that does make you feel good to come in, and it feels finished, and it feels nice, and having those things done. I also, from October through this month, myself and some friends of I have been doing something called Last 90 Days, and it's talking about finishing the last 90 days of the year stronger than you started, and not waiting till January 1 to make a resolution, and having those consistent habits of drinking enough water, practicing your gratitude, getting up early enough, you know, choosing the right foods for yourself, all of that kind of stuff is stuff that's important to practice daily. I think it's really important to have a strong circle of friends, people who are going to check in on you and be like, are you okay? And then you lie to them until you tell them, yes, I'm fine. And then they're like, you're lying. You're not fine. What's really wrong, you know? So you need those kind of people in your life. And if you don't have them, start looking. You need at least one or two people in your life that will be in your face. The last thing is finding things that calm you, whether that's like breathing exercises or spa music, I don't know, whatever that's called, worship, having your home not be so cluttered. I'm way guilty of that kind of stuff, but I recognize how much better I feel when I don't see things and piles and stuff. So that's, yes, my dad's like king of clean. So the next thing I want to talk about is coping. So I think that we always have to find healthy ways of coping, because we can't avoid stress, we can't avoid emotions, we can't avoid our job, we can't avoid the stresses in our home or finances or whatever it might be. Those will always be there. Unless you're a hermit and you run away in the mountains, you will have to interact with people and you probably will have stress. And the suicide rate among like seemingly happy people is alarming. I don't know if you've noticed the trend. I think when it happens with famous people, we really are talking about it. But the amount of people who seem happy, who seem okay, who's like nobody would have ever expected, I thought they were fine. Those people are not. They're not okay. And they don't know how to cope. They don't know how to deal. And too many of us are not taught coping skills. So we mimic the ways that we see from our parents or that we see from people around us, or we try to figure out our own ways of coping to make us feel better as a child, and then we set those trends for our life. And it's either unhealthy coping or possibly avoidance, like maybe it'll change, maybe it'll get better if I just ignore all my problems. And I don't have all the answers, nor do I do it all right the right, you know, every time. I don't do everything all the time like that I want to. But these are some ways that have been helpful to me as far as coping. Being active, and I think we all know that's probably true, and nobody really probably loves it. Whether it's like walking or dancing around the house or go to the gym or going on a bike ride or whatever, I think being active, even a minimal amount of time a day, does something to you, does something to your brain, to your energy. The second thing is journaling. For the longest time, I avoided journaling. I was just like, I don't want to write out my feelings. I don't want to write out my thoughts. I don't really want to face any of that stuff, so I didn't. But my counselor had told me, she's just like, just write whatever, like just random, just keep writing until you're done. So whether it's random things that I'm thinking or things that happen during the day that I want to remember or feelings or thoughts or whatever, I just kind of throw up on my paper, and then it's amazing how much better you feel when you get it all out. So the next one is self-care. I think that it's really important to reset your brain, and oftentimes we hear self-care and all the guys are like, yeah, I'm not getting a massage. I'm not doing that. Because we assume that it's going to cost us big money to care for ourselves or to think about ourselves. And a lot of times we don't want to. We're like, we don't want to take the time to think about ourselves or to make sure that we're okay. But whether it's like breathing or relaxing music or exercises or candles or a face mask. Sorry, guys. I don't know how many of these are mine, so they may not apply to you. But like reading, singing, playing with makeup, a bubble bath, all those things, the guys are just like, you lost me. The next thing that I find really important is seeing a counselor. I think oftentimes we wait till the last resort, till we're really, really messed up, then I'll go see a counselor, then I'll talk to a professional. Or you're like, oh, I talked to my best friend about my problems. But my opinion is, unless your best friend is a therapist, they're going to maybe give you good advice, but they probably can't really help you with some of the issues that you might really have. And I've seen the same counselor since like 2012, off and on, and it's interesting to me the difference between talking to a friend, talking to a parent, talking to a coworker versus talking to somebody who knows what they're talking about. And they have a degree on the wall, and not everything they say is perfect, but ways of coping, ways of dealing, and different ways of seeing things that you maybe never saw before. The next things are affirmations or statements, such as scriptures or who God says you are, making those statements. And sometimes we think like, well, that's really weird. You're like, oh, I'm God's child, okay. Like, it really can be kind of strange to say it to yourself. Maybe you don't believe it, and so it can be difficult. Some of the statements that I've written for myself to remind myself and often speak over myself, sometimes in faith because I don't believe it about myself. Some of those things are like, you're brave, you're strong, you're smart, you're loyal, you're loving, you're powerful, you're genuine. Even when you don't feel that way about yourself, this is who you are. This is who God says you are. And I think it's so important to proclaim those things over ourselves, especially because we don't believe it about ourselves. So the last one is being aware and connecting to your feelings, which some people are like, I don't want to think about my feelings. I don't want to feel my feelings. But I think that you can't properly respond unless you actually connect and understand, like, what am I thinking? What am I feeling right now? And being aware in that moment. So I'm going to be real honest. We're, like, getting real here. So something that I've never shared publicly, really, I had my counselor told me years ago that I had an eating disorder, and I didn't want to accept it. I'm like, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to claim that. You know, we hear the whole Bible thing, like, if you say it over yourself, then it's going to become true, and I'm like, I don't want to think about it. And I had just a really unhealthy and dysfunctional connection with food and the thoughts around it and the feelings around it. And it sounds silly because it's like, that's strange, but I wouldn't accept it. For the longest time, I didn't want to think about it. I didn't want to talk about it. But until I was ready to admit it and to face it, I couldn't fix it. And I think so many of us are in situations where we don't want to talk about these things that hurt, these things that are hard, because it takes a lot of work to fix it. It takes a lot of work to face it and be like, wow, okay, this is a problem and I have to deal with this to get better. So a quick story about coming to terms and being aware with your feelings connected to my story. So I had started in the summertime reading this book about eating issues, and it was really hard to read some of it because it hit way too close to home and it was too painful sometimes, and they force you to do activities and force you to do work behind what they're telling you. And one of those things was a food mood journal. And what that is you have to write the time and the food and the feeling that you were having at the time you're eating the food, and then what caused that feeling. So it might be, okay, I ate ice cream, and I was feeling sad because my best friend said a lie about me, right? So whatever it might be, there's a reason why you're feeling this feeling. So I had been feeling kind of sad and lonely, and so I was trying to have a good coping option. I'm like, I'm gonna go work out. This is a good choice. So I'm gonna go work out. And so I get all ready, and I'm like, oh, I have to go to the grocery store because they're going to close and I need to get toilet paper before they close. And so I went in there, got the toilet paper, and then I passed by the ice cream. And I was like, oh, ice cream sounds really good. And I'm like, if you're not aware of different ice creams, there's one that's called Halo Top, and it's like a healthier version of ice cream. Doesn't have as many of the bad things in it. So I'm like, ooh, I could get that. And then I'm like, I am going to the gym. You know, so I'm like justifying why this is a good choice. And I'm not eating like Haagen-Dazs, and I'm not eating Ben and Jerry's. I mean, it's a good option, and it fits in my food plan. So I'm justifying the whole time, standing like trying to pick what flavor I want. And I'm gonna work out anyway. So I'm standing there and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna have to write this down. I don't wanna write it down because I'm like, what am I feeling right now? Okay, I was heading to the gym because I feel sad and lonely. Like, I'm gonna have to write that down and I don't want to write it down. And so I was like, dang it. So like in my head, I'm weighing this out. So maybe my body, because it's a healthier option for me, maybe my body sees it as a better option than something that's, you know, worse in calories or sugar or whatever. But my emotions and my feelings don't see it any differently. And it was that moment that was like a light bulb for me. And if you've never dealt with eating issues, you may have to apply this to your own struggle or your own issue. But it was like that moment I connected, oh, I'm self-soothing. I'm going to go choose a better option. I'm justifying that I'm going to work out and I'm only going to eat a portion and I'm going to stay on my plan. But in my emotions, I'm still responding in a way that I don't want to respond. So I had to choose in that moment to change and shift the narrative in my head. So I'm standing in front of the cooler and I'm like, oh, dang it. Like, I recognize and I really want the ice cream still, but I know I shouldn't because it's not that it's not healthy food-wise, but it's not healthy emotionally for me. So I verbally am like, walk away, Liz. Walk away. Walk away. And I'm trying to pump myself up to walk away. And so I'm out loud saying, walk away. And I look over and there's this lady staring at me. I'm like, not you, walk away. Me, I'm walking away. Right? So I have to leave. But I walked away, and it was such an empowering moment for me. It was literally the first time that I connected my feelings, my thoughts, with my responses, and how I had unhealthily done that in the past. And so I think we often don't recognize that there's a problem until it's too late. You know, we let our lives happen. We let, you know, just coasting by. We let those things happen because we don't have habits in place. And we forget to be consistent. We don't have those things in front of our faces to remind us to do the things, to say the things, to all that. And then we get surprised or blindsided when everything kind of starts to fall apart. We're like, what, what? You know, so whether it's spiritually or our health or mentally or emotionally, if we're not consistently doing the things, if we're not reading the Bible, if we're not worshiping, if we're not praying, if we're not reading books, if we're not growing, learning, if we're not in counseling, if we're not being active, if we're not doing all the things that we say we want to do to be better versions of us, then we're going to be surprised when it doesn't work later down the road. Another quote that I like is, failure is success if we learn from it. Failure is success, but it's only if we learn from it. So messing up is inevitable. But I think that it's so important how long it takes you to snap back. That's the only thing that matters. So we're going to apply it to my issue, eating. But you can apply it to anything. So like a bad option would be you botch your plan, you mess up, and you say, oh man, I made a bad choice. I'm going to give up forever, altogether. I'm done. And you've ruined your year, you know. The better option is, okay, you botched your plan. Okay, I made a bad choice. I'm going to do better tomorrow. That's okay. But I think the best version, as you grow, you see yourself growing in this area. The best option is you botched your plan. Okay, so I made a bad choice. I'm going to do better next time, like the next meal, the next choice. That's when I'm going to do better. I'm not going to wait till tomorrow. I'm not going to wait for a month until I feel cruddy about myself again for messing up my New Year's resolution or whatever it might be, but my next choice will be better. So one of the last things that I want to talk about is my word for this year. So one of the things I wear on my wrist is the the word resilient. And the definition of resilient is a person able to withstand or recover quickly from difficult conditions. And that's what I think is so important, recovering quickly, right? How quickly can you recover from a bad choice, a difficult condition? And does it mean it's easy? Absolutely not. It's not easy to quickly recover from something. But I think that it's possible to do better every day, do better than the day before, do better than the day before that. And I think that the true measure of growth is not in the absence of failure, but in your response time and getting back up again. So I just want to encourage you guys, no matter what happens, no matter what choice you made or may make, like, get back up and get back up again and again and again, and you will never fail if you keep getting back up again. Thank you.
Well, stand with me and take a praise break just for a moment. Proud of that young lady. She's done incredible. Hallelujah. God bless you. You may be seated. I want to take the next 18 minutes, and I want to give you a spiritual, scriptural foundation for why she just said everything that she said. Because in the charismatic movement, in the Christian culture, we know how to use Christian cliches. We know how to say things, but yet we're not committed to them, and we need to follow through. And I want to take 18 minutes and tell you, don't stop on six. Tell somebody, don't stop on six. I'm in the book of Joshua, chapter 6, 1 through 5, and I want to expose three things in this particular chapter and these verses that we all face that want to cause us to quit, to take our resolutions and give up. 80% of those people that make resolutions will fail in the month of February. But most resolutions are based in kingdom principles. I want to be a better person. I want to be more loving. I want to be more interactive. I want to do something healthy for myself so that I have the energy to be interactive. So in Joshua chapter 6 and verse 1, now the gates of Jericho were tightly shut because the people were afraid of the Israelites. Do you understand that sometimes we're fearful of what the enemy's trying to do, but in reality, the devil is more afraid of you and the potential and the value of what has been placed within you? No one was allowed to go in or out. But the Lord said to Joshua, I have given you Jericho, its king, and all its strong warriors. You and your fighting men should march around the town once a day for 6 days. Seven priests will walk ahead of the ark, each carrying a ram's horn. On the seventh day, you are to march around the town seven times with the priest blowing the horns. Verse 5. When you hear the priest give one long blast on the ram's horn, have all the people shout as loud as they can, then the walls of the town will collapse and the people can charge straight into the town. I want to help you today examine a couple of things because we need to understand that Israel is now coming into the promised place and they're going to possess what God has promised. It's amazing because sometimes in life we have promises. We have resolutions that we're going to make based upon promises that God will be with us, that He'll help us, but it's different to embrace a promise and then actually possessing what God has said. Joshua has now waited 45 years just for the opportunity to perceive and enter into what God has promised him. They said, you're supposed to march for 6 days. It is amazing to me that God spoke to Joshua specifically about what was going to happen, but the children of Israel did not know on the seventh day that the walls would collapse. Read the story. God told Joshua they would, but Joshua never told the people. That's why I've come to tell you, don't stop on six. When you're frustrated, when you're weary, when things that you're doing, you have forward motion, but you see no change. What are the three elements that all of us face when we make resolutions, when we want to be better people? Maybe we want to eat better. Maybe we are determined we're going to affect and impact somebody's life. We're going to read the Bible more intensely, strategically. We're going to worship more passionately. We're going to pray more effectively. We're going to make a difference in somebody's life. The first thing that happens, especially in this story, and especially when we make a determination and a decision in our heart that we're going to do something different or transition something different in our life, or we have a promise from God, our perspective is blocked. You see, let me help you understand something about Jericho. Jericho was the first city. And in the midst of this, Jericho was not a large community. You could walk around Jericho in about an hour. And so God is giving them the instruction to walk around Jericho for 6 days, one time each day. And it wasn't that the city was so large, it's the fact that the walls were so tall and the walls were so high. Our dilemma is not always the capacity of what we want to do as much as it is we can't see behind the wall, we don't know what to anticipate. Sometimes we don't even know what we're fighting. The first thing that we do is always the greatest challenge. Some of you will make determinations before midnight on Tuesday night. Next year, I'm going to really get to the gym. I'm going to eat better. I'm going to have a better attitude. I'm going to start doing things in my life that will help change me. And so we begin to measure what we can do based upon what other people have done. But what you have to remember is this: we see someone else's victory, but we tend to minimize or oversimplify the process that they went through. We see somebody testify about the great things that God has done. And when we see someone else's victory, we have to be careful that we don't oversimplify their process, because they went through a process. They went through a challenge. They went through a struggle. I pray that whatever resolution you make based on the Word of God in any arena of your life, that you won't stop at six. And so in the midst of this, it may look easy for others. It may look like it was a breeze for them. But these men are warriors. They're waiting for the opportunity to take this city. They don't know what's on the other side of the walls. Maybe they're concerned about when they make that decision what they're going to face. I haven't been on the treadmill for a while, and yesterday, because I'm preaching this today, I made up my mind I was going to get on the treadmill so that I wouldn't stand up here and look like a hypocrite. And so I'm doing 30 minutes, and then I'm doing 35 minutes, and you know, you come to that point where you take your second wind and you feel like you're about to fall apart. For one moment, you think you're having another heart attack. And so all of these things run through your head. But then when you're finished, there is an element of I've accomplished something. And I want to create a strategy. The reason we don't start out and that it's difficult is that we're not certain. Can I really see these walls conquered? They did not know. I don't know about you, but when I work out, I want to hold the timer. I don't want somebody else to come and tell me you have 10 minutes left, you have 20 minutes left. I want to be in control of the timer. Do you know why? Because I can look at it and say, I've only got 4 minutes left. I can do this. I've only got 2 minutes left. But when you're not sure about how much time is left, you can be exasperated. When you get a promise from God and you're not sure when it's going to happen, we live in a microwave society and we want it tomorrow. I gave in the offering yesterday, I should probably win the lotto tomorrow. And so that's our mentality. And God is not a microwave. He's a crock pot. He's more interested in your character than your comfort, because what you refuse to confront, you will never conquer. And so that's why it's important to do those things that Pastor Liz has mentioned. Remember that Christ is in you, the hope of glory. You have value. You have worth. You have purpose. God has stamped a destiny on your life. And there are many days that you feel like you're just making movement, but nothing is changing. You're awful quiet. So our perspective gets blocked. Maybe we're overwhelmed. That's why it's wise for you to be in church today. And for those of you that are watching online because you're still dealing from your Christmas sugar cookie coma, we love you. We thank God for you. But our perspective becomes blocked. And it's good that you're in church today, because the great thing about coming to church is being able to interact and be involved in an atmosphere of worship, connecting with people, serving on a team, connecting with pastors, watching two young ladies' lives transformed. Absolutely. Let me just say this. They just gave their life to Jesus Tuesday morning in our offices. And I always ask people, what's happening in your life? How are things changing? On the way up the stairs this morning, they were just in tears. They said, I've never felt this kind of peace. And we become accustomed to that because we live in it and we walk in it. But there's a world out there that doesn't understand the value of what you have and what you know. And so as we move forward and we look at the obstacles in our life, or in ministry, or whatever we're facing, it's good to be in the house of God, because if for 6 days a week you're thinking about your challenges, your dysfunctions, your limitations, you're thinking about your burdens, your problems, you contaminate your perspective. And reality is 99% perspective and perception, because we know that God is for us. So in the midst of worship, we know as we come to church, I'm not doing life by myself. I'm not alone. There are other people here that have the same challenges, the same struggles, and I can do this. That's why we need to be encouragers of one another. That's why we need to interact with one another and not just head to the parking lot and spin our tires on the rock and the asphalt to see who can get to QQ Buffet and Red Apple first. They'll still have food. It's important to interact with one another. But you say, I don't want to interact with somebody because I'm afraid they're going to ask me how I'm doing and I'm not doing well. That's why I asked Pastor Liz to share what she shared today. Because the spiritual foundation is this. If we don't do those things consistently, we will find ourselves coming short of what God has promised to us because of the obstacles in front of us and the frustration that it can bring. I want you to look at verse 1 and 2 of Joshua chapter 6, because in verse 1, the Bible says that the gates were shut or barred because of the children of Israel. In verse 2, God declares, I have already given you the city. The problem I have with verse 2 is verse 1. God is the only entity, He is the only God that can reach in your past and declare your future before you've ever fought a battle. God says, I know that the gates are barred, but I'm going to give this to you. But you need to follow my instructions. Every day, I want you to walk around the city once. I want you to do that for 6 days. He told Joshua, on the seventh day, I want you to shout and the walls will fall. Joshua told the people that we're going to walk around the city for 6 days. On the seventh day, we're going to walk around 7 times, but Joshua did not tell them that the walls would fall. And I wondered about that. Could it be that Joshua remembered 45 years prior when 12 spies went into the land and 10 of them came back with a wicked report, an evil report, and he did not want them to think that the walls falling had anything to do with them? Only their obedience. So number one, our perception can be blocked. But the second thing is this. Our progress does not always seem obvious. Doesn't always seem obvious. How long have you held on to a promise? Maybe you have resolutions from last year that you're going to pick up this year. What will be the difference maker? What will be the game changer? Don't stop on 6. If we just knew when God was going to bring the reality of our promise, wouldn't it be easier? If you knew that in 3 months, the prayer that you've been praying, God would answer, wouldn't that give you a boost? Wouldn't you go home and say, I can do this for 90 days. I got this, but you don't know. I wonder how many people this morning are on lap number 6, and they are facing relationships, they're facing struggles, and breakthrough is on their next lap, but on lap 6, they're so overwhelmed, they just want to give up. Don't stop on 6. So even though we're making progress, it doesn't always seem obvious. March around the wall 6 days. On the 7th day, go 7 times. You have to understand, these men were warriors. The first day when they left, I wonder if these warriors left their tent and said to their wife, I'll be back in about an hour and 15 minutes. I'll stop by Starbucks, pick you up a Marco Capo Cata, white choco, whatever you want. They thought that that day maybe something was going to happen. They marched around the wall once and nothing happened. And on top of that, Joshua said, keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything. Do you know why? Because delayed promises sometimes relieve words of unbelief. And Joshua had seen that 45 years ago. So the first day he comes home and his wife greets him as he comes through the tent, waiting for a great statement of testimony. Honey, what happened today? How many Canaanites did you kill? Well, look, we didn't kill any. We were out for a walk. But I think, Joshua, this was just a training day. This was just a setup day. This was just a day to check out the territory. On the second day, he goes again. Nothing has happened. At least, if I was God, and that is a treacherous thing to even consider, but if I was God, I would at least allow them to sense some progress. On the first day around, I would have at least let the top layer of the wall crumble a little bit so that they could go back, at least tell Joshua to tell the warriors, man, you all did a great job today. Appreciate your faithfulness. Appreciate your commitment, your consecration. Nothing, zero, zilch. And then the second day, we'd take another part of the wall. But I don't believe that God wanted them to do anything else but total commitment and faithfulness and consecration to his instruction. It had already been promised in the book of Deuteronomy and the book of Numbers that they were going to possess the land. Joshua was very clear that the land is ours, that there would be giants that would have to be removed. And so day after day, the fourth day, this warrior comes home. He's walked another hour around the walls. He picks up the same mocha latte for his wife. His wife is asking intrinsically what happened today. And I wonder if the warrior said, Joshua is out of his mind. He's training us to be a part of the local marching band. Nothing has happened. We are mocked from the top of the walls. We're believing a promise, and yet the devil continues to mock us and criticize us. Help me, somebody. We don't see anything happening. There's no incremental progress. You see, I believe that if we want to eat right, I would do much better if I could eat a piece of broccoli and an ab would just pop up. You know, eat a piece of cauliflower and you've got biceps like Arnold. But it doesn't work that way. What do you do when you have a promise and the walls are so high that your perception is blocked? And number two, even though you're making forward motion, you don't see any obvious progress. And that's what was happening to the children of Israel for 6 days. They did not know on the 7th day that God was going to do something phenomenal. The third thing is this: the process is always open-ended. God doesn't always set a clock and say, on this day, at this time, this is what's going to happen. I'm really concerned about preachers on YouTube and on television that every time there's an event in this world, they get on television and scare the hell out of everybody. Jesus could come tomorrow. Well, I want to call them and go, he didn't, and that was 90 days ago. Why don't we begin to preach to God's people about character and strength and evangelism and discipleship and walking in the power of the anointing so that when he does come, we go? But we have such a hysteria Well, Jesus could come in 2020, so why do I need to do anything? I talked to a young man the other night and said, my life is shattered and I've made bad decisions because all I heard all my life was Jesus could come tomorrow and I never planned for anything. The dilemma of marching around walls and making resolutions is that the progress is not always obvious. I want to be in control of how long I'm going to do something. I want to know, is there anybody else like me today that you just want to know when this thing's going to happen, when it's going to get done? How many of you are like me, you don't wait very well? God promised it. I want it to happen by the time I get home, delivered by Amazon, by some kind of whirly bird that they released over an hour and a half ago. I want it now. I don't like the interim. I don't like the process. So my question today is, even when the process is open-ended and we feel like we are waiting and we are frustrating, if God would just let us know that we're about to get to the end, wouldn't that help? But my question is this, are you still willing to pray in 2020 when you don't see an answer? Are you still willing to give when you don't see supply? Are you still willing to love on people when they act like something less than a believer? Are you still willing to serve when you don't see anything and nobody is appreciating you? Because that's the key to making resolutions and doing something daily that will change our life. We sang the song this morning, He will do it again. The walls that will fall, Pastor Liz did not know what I was going to preach. I listened to what she was going to do and made my adjustments. What kind of a promise, what kind of a resolution are you making? What are you believing God for? Can you trust God when you don't see anything happen, when your perspective is blocked and you don't feel like you're making progress? Did you ever have a moment when you just wondered if God was really for you or not? And your sin became greater than His grace? Or your failure became so much larger than your future? Can you still trust Him? Can you still walk with Him? Did you know that there are people today that are not actively involved in a local church because they have had promises from God, but it didn't happen when they wanted it to happen? So they have become frustrated with the God of heaven that can do anything, that can do all things, that can do miracles, but He never walks on our time frame. He never operates by our clock. But I promise you this, He's rarely early and never late. He told Joshua, I want you to march around the walls six times, once each day for 6 days. On the seventh day, I want you to march around it seven times, then I want you to shout. Who am I speaking to who's on day six? Don't stop on six. Make sure you take the information and do something every day, and you begin to see God miraculously move. I am so hungry and thirsty to see lost people come to Jesus. Y'all don't know how refreshing you have been this week. I talked to them Friday. We began to talk about water baptism. They showed up, and I didn't know they were coming. It's refreshing not to have to beg, plead, and ask people, invite them to come to church. Please come to church. You need to be in church when people want to come. So I asked him, I said, has anything changed since Tuesday? He said, we're happier. Got a lot of peace. Do you know it's all about making a difference in somebody's life? Maybe you're believing God today for a house, a car. That's fine. That's great if God has blessed you that way. But have we so missed the opportunity to make a difference in people's lives? And sometimes, maybe people you're praying for is like walking around the walls. And we don't see any movement, we don't see anything happening, but we're not going to stop believing. What kind of resolutions have you made? I've made a couple that I think are kingdom-based, but it's going to require me to do something daily, something that I know that I can accomplish, and I'm going to believe God for the rest of it. How many have given up on relationships? How many have given up on their kids? How many have given up on breakthroughs in their life when they were in reality on lap six and they walked away? Didn't know that God had it marked on his calendar. If they'll just show up. If they'll just show up. We were in a duplex last Sunday afternoon. I took some pastors and a team with us to pray through this apartment because this individual had been ritualistically abused and raped since she was about 5 years old. And it's amazing what we begin to trust in. We trust in crucifixes. We trust in all kinds of things, and those things won't help until we go to the root and the source and say, God, I'm trusting you. I renounce anything that's in darkness. I talked to this individual this week. I said, what's going on? Said, there's been no demonic activity for days. We expected that. We anticipated that. Because God is great. He is sovereign. He is incredible. Can I tell you that whatever you're believing God for, whatever you are resolving in your life, that probably is a kingdom principle and is going to increase your influence and impact in other people's lives, he sees you already there. I can't find scripture passages, even in the New Testament, where Jesus brought up people's past but did not help them embrace their future. He did not allow them to linger in their past. He did not allow them to stay there. He did not allow them to be frustrated. The Bible says in Psalm 16:11, in the presence of the Lord is fullness of joy, and it's the joy of the Lord that becomes your strength. It's the joy of the Lord that continues to cause you to move forward, to believe God, that at some moment, if I'll just keep doing the right things, I'm not going to stop praying. I'm not going to stop believing God. I'm not going to stop reaching. I'm not going to allow myself not to be full of the Holy Spirit. I'm not going to allow myself to stay out of church because I don't feel good and God's not doing what I want him to do. I'm going to press on because I might be on lap six today. So don't stop on six.